Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. We're recording this podcast following our final board week of the year here in Frankfurt. So today we're going to take a little bit of a look back and reflect on the progress we've made, challenges out in the market and how we're helping to address them. And also we'll do the usual recap of our board week and a few of the other things that we've been looking at. So in 2025, we've focused really on three different areas. First, adoption of the standards around the world. Second, supporting the implementation of those standards. And third, building out the baseline with our research projects. So Emmanuel, why don't you start us off with adoption?
Hi, Sue. It's great to be with you here for the last Dog and Pony Show of the ISSB for this season. Thank you, everyone, for your interest and listening to the voice of the Vice Chair here. So as far as I'm concerned, yes, I can say a few words about this critical aspect of the year's achievement and challenges in terms of adoption. I think we have seen a continued sustained interest, a lot of new jurisdictions coming in to the adoption pathways. Continued a lot of support by investors, and interestingly, an increasing amount of companies, number of companies that has a direct interest in the applicability of the ISSB standards in the growing number of jurisdictions in which they will have to, or they will be required in the future to apply the standards in versions of those standards that may be localized. And so that have been a lot of conversations between jurisdictions, investors, and companies for us over the last 12 months, landing at the end of this year with around 40 jurisdictions which are in the process of adopting the standards. And increasingly, as I just mentioned several times, jurisdiction that reflects all types of economy, whether that is, you know, of size, types of GDP, extractive or services, etc., but also from both the developed and developing types of economies. There is clearly a support, as I said, for global comparability that is driving the adoption or the use of the ISSB standards. We can see how it is less and less of a trade-off for jurisdictions, including the ones that are in the Global Emerging Market Committee's adoption network for ISSB at the IOSCO, that there is only one available and logical solution for adoption of the sustainability standards for capital markets, and that is the ISSB. And so the question is whether that's the right time to make the investments of going into that, rather than if there is another solution or something that, you know, they could create from their own totally. Having said that, the interesting thing at the end of this year is really that we see that there is a further need to reduce the friction in the system to deliver on the promise of the global baseline, while retaining flexibility for jurisdictions to meet their local information needs by adding as building blocks from the baseline. And that will take us later into the notion that has started to be floated about passporting ISSB standards as issued by the ISSB for reporters which are based out of the countries in which they have to report. We're helping, of course, all these communities with tools and programs that have been actively activated this year. The regulatory implementation program, the roadmap development and tool, and the jurisdictional rationale guide that was published by our regulatory team. That is a massive amount of protocols, programs, guidelines for regulators to think about their pathways, consider the policy rationales, and start the pathways really. We've decided, very importantly, to expand our jurisdictional adopters working group, which will serve as the platform for multilateral but also bilateral regional discussions on ISSB standards as the global passport, as I mentioned just before. We continued our work on transparency through profiles and snapshots that we've issued in earlier June this year. Which we continue to get a lot of questions about and that are deeply used by market participants to understand what exactly is required from them, but also what to expect in terms of transparency in any of these markets. And we will obviously continue to equip the market with that transparency in the future. And finally, I'd say overall, we're helping through creating a more efficient disclosure system and making progress on interoperability in particular with those standards that go beyond the capital markets. And obviously the two big examples are the GRI, which brought equivalence agreement for greenhouse gas emissions to IFRS S2. So you don't have to do GRI's module on greenhouse gas emissions if you've done IFRS S2. You can just build from that. And also the close working collaboration we have with GRI in the SASB standards enhancement. The other big one is, of course, the ESRS omnibus, and on which I may just comment at this stage that as we've seen over the last 10 days, the EFRAG has finalized their advice to the Commission on the simplified ESRS. That is, I think, for us an opportunity to congratulate them for this work. We welcome their efforts, including the ones that were linked to not only simplify, but also get more interoperability in the mechanism. There have been progress on that front, and we will be engaging closely with the European Commission as these ESRS are being finalized into delegated acts in the coming months. So, overall, I'd say in 2025, the reporting landscape continues to evolve positively. We've seen ESRS and ISSB standards coming slightly closer together, and it's a promising situation for the next several months and couple of years. It's exciting to see, but, makes our second focus area, implementation support, all the more important. So maybe you can speak about that too.
Sure. So since we published S1 and S2, of course, our primary focus has been on trying to do what we can to support this really important change in reporting. So we want to make sure investors get the information they need to make their informed decisions and make comparisons around the world. But we also want to make sure that we do what we can to make that a proportionate ask of companies and to provide support where we can. And so that's been a main focus of our work. And one of the things that we've done is, of course, to work on making sure that people really understand what the requirements are. So maybe I'll highlight first our sort of efforts to educate. One thing to note is we've got an e-learning module, and it's been great to see over 10,000 registered users for that. We've also conducted over 60 training sessions around the world in more than 45 jurisdictions. And we've developed a whole range of educational resources this year. So explaining the proportionality of our standards, the guidance that we developed on transition plan disclosures or disclosures about how a company's transitioning for resilience and reducing emissions. And in August, providing some more information about disclosing information on anticipated financial effects. So that's the sort of education front. The other thing we're doing is we've got our eye out for where our companies might need help. And I think the highlight there is the work that we've done to move at pace to make some really targeted amendments in S2 on greenhouse gas emissions disclosures to clarify some things and provide some reliefs, being really careful to get this balance between getting information that investors need but being proportionate in what we ask of companies. So really excited to get that out, and thanks to the staff and all of our stakeholders who helped us along the way there. The other thing that we're doing, which is also supporting implementation, given that these standards are really helpful to both provide decision useful information on climate, but also on other sustainability related risks and opportunities, is our work to maintain and enhance our industry-based SASB standards. We're taking a phased approach on this, starting off with some priority industries and then looking at opportunities for improving consistency between disclosures on other industries as well. And we're really thrilled to have consulted this year on an initial set of 9 SASB standards within 3 sectors: extractives and minerals processing, infrastructure, and food and beverage. And that consultation's just closed. So we've got lots of letters. Thank you again for everybody who wrote in, and we'll be moving forward, re-deliberating that in the new year. And we're starting to look at the preparation of the next set of exposure drafts on this front and thinking ahead to what the next phase of the work is on those SASB enhancements. But of course, supporting the implementation of what we already have in S1 and S2 is our main priority, but we also are making sure that we move forward and looking at ways to build out the global baseline where appropriate. So perhaps, Emmanuel, you could tell us a bit about the research projects and where we're going.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Sue. And you know, as a reminder for everyone, we are in the middle of our agenda delivery for 24-26. So it's it's probably a good opportunity to just take stock of where we are. I may start with nature, which we've been discussing a lot, but we have also made great progress on human capital. So both research projects are advancing. We actually discussed this week both topics, nature and human capital. And if I start with nature, I would start by, you know, recapping the research and the two phases of research that led us to the recent decisions. The first thing I'd say is that the research has demonstrated real investor demand for information and for additional information, with a few examples that I'll take of the types of areas where we heard, you know, in investor interest. One is about information related to the proximity of an entity's asset and activities to important or sensitive ecosystems. So the GPS based or the, you know, location based nature of some of these topics. Another one is the use of natural resources or ecosystem services, in which there is dependency by the business model for companies, such as water withdrawal and availability from water-stressed regions. That could be today in some, you know, value chains, but tomorrow, of course, with, you know, added temperature elevation or further climate, you know, changes that might, in certain scenarios, lead to a particular stress on water issues. These interdependencies and interconnections between climate and nature are actually been something that investors have been asking for information, and you know, the nature-based solutions to the greenhouse gas emissions is an example of that. For companies as well to start to use standardized terminology, which would help with comparability, has been an ask by investors. And I'll finish by, you know, mentioning something which is, of course, at the core of our approach in that research, is how much industry-specific information can actually be the core of what is being provided in terms of information that is required by investors. And here, of course, the SASB standards will help. We're grateful for the feedback through our recent consultation, which will help us enhance nature-related disclosures requirements, also through the prism of the SASB standards. With all of that, regular listeners and recent listeners would recall that we spent a lot of last month's podcast discussing our decision on nature. But let me summarize it briefly here. First, we formally approved the move to standard setting after this research phase. We will start working to develop an exposure draft for incremental disclosure requirements beginning of 2026, with an aim to have the ED ready by Biodiversity COP 17 in October of 2026. And with that, I think we have now a very, you know, solid platform to go. And of course, encapsulating overall this notion that not every company may have nature-related risks and opportunities to disclose. Disclosures are, as usually for us, only required when financially material and especially relevant for nature. The emphasis that this will vary by activity, by company, by sector, and by jurisdiction. So we intend to be very nimble in the approach, and as we already said last month, most likely come with something that will not be creating any architecture obligation or commitments in our standards, staying very flexible, modular about what we would add to S1 and S2 for nature. And also, as you highlighted to during last month's discussion, with an effective date to be determined at a later point in time, so that there is a clear view on what the baseline will be when it is implemented. And in the meantime, an opportunity for companies that want to use those standards or regulators that want to take them, that this is available on the shelf for more comparability and transparency to the market. So that's the recap. What I didn't say is the obvious, which is that we've decided to use TNFD as a base for this work, and we will build and draw on the TNFD framework where relevant, which will help us, and as usual, reduce the fragmentation. We have been created for that, drive efficiencies, start from what exists and what is best fit, and of course, continue to meet our investor information needs. So that's what I'd say on nature, and you have a lot more to say to on the rest of our agenda.
I've always got a lot to say. People know me well, I'm sure. So the first thing I'd say is something I said in the last podcast, and it made me laugh when I saw that it got quoted again, you know, don't panic. We know that there's a lot to do on S1 and S2, and we're going to be really measured when we think about what we're introducing and when we introduce it. So we're going to be proportionate. So I'll just reiterate that message. But the other research project, of course, is human capital. And I just want to confirm that we made good progress on that as well. So in this week's board meeting, we had an in-depth discussion on the necessity for standard setting and the feasibility of standard setting. Which was really interesting. And it's worth reflecting perhaps just for a second that we're at a slightly different point with nature and human capital, having made the formal decision to move to standard setting and to work towards an exposure draft for nature. And we're not quite at that point with human capital, but we're not far off. So what we looked at this week was feasibility. And so we noted that there's no equivalent of the TCFD recommendations that we had for climate or the TNFD recommendations on nature that we're going to draw on in this case. But we do have resources, including the SASB standards that provide us starting points. But we do have more groundwork to do compared with the opportunity that we have on the nature side to draw on the TNFD recommendations. On the other hand, though, that gives us an opportunity for us to really build consensus and to really build out the comparability of disclosures, which is quite exciting. In terms of necessity, for those of you who want to get into the details, I'm sure there's some geeks listening, I encourage you to have a look at the board paper. And there's a table at the back of the board paper from this week, which compares the content areas of IFRS S1 and looks at the evidence for those different areas of where we can see investor information needs in relation to human capital. And that evidence shows investor information needs around, for example, strategy, for example, how your strategy for your workforce-related risks and opportunities are working with your overall strategy in your business, and a discussion around some information on metrics that are of interest to investors, such as workforce turnover and health and safety. So coming up next, the staff are really at the point of pulling these findings together, working towards bringing us recommendations on what next step we take, so whether and how to undertake standard setting or to develop other materials in relation to human capital. But I think we really saw this week the case for the need for information on this from investors and really reiterating the importance of this project and this information. I think some have perhaps thought that we were saying we see nature to be a higher priority in terms of our work and investor interest. It's not the case. We're just at a slightly different pace because we don't have the benefit of a TNFD style document to work from. But other than that, I expect to see moving forward in a similar direction to nature, probably pretty soon. Now, with that, Emmanuel, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about what you've been hearing out and about around the world, because you've been traveling quite a bit recently.
Yeah, recently was South Africa, Canada, and other places. What I'd say overall is that you know, the meetings in South Africa were for the B20 meetings with the South African presidency. First and foremost, it was great to be back in Johannesburg, a place where I've been quite a bit in the past for me, but also to see the progress, in South Africa in the pathway towards potential adoption of the standards. I had the privilege of participating in an adoption readiness working group meeting, one of the inaugural meetings of the group, that's going to come with recommendations, initial recommendations, probably in the first half of next year. So it was really, really, great to be interacting there. But the wider B20 meetings highlighted the level of interest from the business organizations, essentially, of a number of jurisdictions of B20 of G20 that I've been able to meet on for bilaterals in this further simplification of the baseline, and the fact that the reduction of fragmentation, as is has been the case, for instance, on nature, where there was an ask from regulators for us to show what the baseline would be, to avoid that there would be multiple approaches to nature by jurisdictional standard setters, and the same on human capital. So you can see that there starts to be a co-ownership of what we are doing, which is, I think exactly how the IFRS Foundation would approach its work. It's there to produce, a market capital infrastructure that is ultimately owned by the participants. An important discussion was around the smaller companies. And of course, we know that they are part of the value chains of companies that are now using ISSB and will be increasingly doing so. And so they are being brought to the forefront of some of the strategic discussions between investors and corporates, and actually even in the regulators' standpoint on how to ensure that they are appropriately connected to this work. But one thing that I was able to share, and I saw the resonance of that, is that what ISSB standards is actually doing is bringing at the forefront of a company's conversation with its investors and its banks, bringing those value chain partners that they have, which typically, if you're just looking at accounting, you wouldn't even discuss. Mm-hmm. But suddenly, whether those SMEs or informal economies or indigenous people and communities are resilient, are they reliable as a partner? Can you really depend on them? And what is your strategy to ensure that it works becomes part of a mainstream conversation with investors. And you could see some of even the political, tailwind that it creates, and the appetite from a policy standpoint that it actually does that, creates visibility for the participants in the broader economy beyond the pure listed large companies. So that was really an interesting conversation here.
The value chain in action.
Yeah, exactly that. The value chain in action and in deep conversations, and therefore, because these are financially material, capital being allocated into where there would be more resilience at a premium, basically, which is the whole theory of the IFRS Foundation making better decisions on the basis of better information, basically. So it was really interesting to see that for real in this week that I particularly spent there. So yeah, it was a pretty active year and end of the year for us, for all of us. I'd say certainly for all of you around this audience, sustainability has been far from being sustainable this year in many accounts, and continues to be a very, very dynamic space. We obviously focus our attention on capital markets, but I know as well, how much there has been developments beyond our own remit. So I really look forward to carrying the momentum into 2026. In our January podcast, we'll share some thinking about our priorities for the year ahead, of course. So we look forward to updating all of you then. Just before we go, I don't know if that is a Christmas gift, but Let me at least do a quick ad break for the fact that you'll find on our website a new video that provides in 15 minutes exactly some behind of the scenes insights into the work of the ISSB, what we do and how we do it. So don't hesitate to, you know, get on our website, have a look at it. It's only 15 minutes and you'll see more of our faces, more voices than just you and I every month. So we hope you'll appreciate the diversification of this as a final for the 2025 season. And with that, I wish you and your families season's greetings from all the team at the ISSB. Thank you for your partnership this year. See you on the other side.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.